Well, hi, and thank you for asking me again. I was here, I think, at the end of January, early February, and yeah, in a certain sense, I felt as though I've been with you for a while because Paul, I picked up one of your CDs, I think, the last time I was there, and I've often had it singing to me as I've been driving along the car, including this morning, actually, as I was coming in. I've often thought and wondered about how things have been going here. And then I come back today and you sing over 1,000 times to sing, which I haven't sung for an extraordinarily long time. But sang at my wedding, actually, so it all made some really rather nice memories. And that was, what, 34 years ago. So great to hear it again today. I'm busy writing a book at the moment. It's due to the publishers in January, and its title is Jekyll or Hyde, From Toxic to Transforming Faith. And it's exploring the question of why it is that the Christian faith can sometimes be this most marvelous, life-transforming thing that does so much good in the world. And yet sometimes it can also be really toxic. And I don't know if you've sometimes wondered about that question. It bothers me. How can this thing be so incredibly good? And yet, if we're honest, there are times where it just falls so far short of what we're really hoping for. I grew up in apartheid South Africa. And I saw it so vivid, in such a vivid way there. If you look at the struggle of apartheid and something of the history of apartheid, you would know that the church played a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful role in the transformation of society. And you would know that the church at the same time was absolutely complicit in some of the terrible atrocities of that time. So which was it? Was it Jekyll or was it Hyde? And how was it that we can sometimes kind of embrace Christian faith and that can make the most enormous and life-serving difference in the world? And how come can it sometimes be that we embrace that and become something that's really quite destructive? A story from my days in growing up in South Africa. I studied at the University of Natal. And in the apartheid era, universities were segregated and the University of Natal was designated as being for white students. And everything in the South Africa of that day was about race and colour. So white students went along to the University of Natal. I was one of them. But the apartheid system being what it was, it had this one little exception. So the University of Natal was a white university except for the medical school. And the medical school was only for black students. So there was just a strangeness about it. However, that medical school was quite separate from the rest of the university. And by and large, the students never really met with one another. But occasionally they did. I was too friendly with some of the medical students. And I can remember one particular afternoon, Sunday afternoon, we were a small group together, people just talking about their experiences, and one of the black medical students was just absolutely furious and so upset that he spoke about an experience that they'd had in the Ellen Taylor residence, the residence where black students had to stay that particular week. In the middle of the night, the security police had come along about 1 o'clock in the morning and suddenly rounded up everyone from the Ellen Taylor residence and demanded that everyone go out into the field outside without any preparation, without any warning. Some students, this was in Durban where I grew up, and Durban is a very hot, humid city. Many students used to sleep without any clothes on, without any pyjamas, anything, no time to dress, to change. They were just paraded out naked if they weren't wearing any clothes. And they just stood in this field outside there. While the security police just kind of had a picture of someone, went through checking each face, and after a while arrested someone and told the rest of the students that they could go back to their rooms. And this friend of mine, who was one of the students who had just been paraded out, was just furious at having been treated in this kind of way. But he said that as he went back, he saw a young policeman, and he had been part of the security police who were checking up on everyone. And he overheard the conversation. He was phoning his wife, and he heard him say to her, "Hello, love, just wanted to tell you, we found the Kaffir," which was the derogatory term that people gave to people of colour in those times. "We caught the Kaffir. I'll be coming home now. So tell me, love, how did the Bible study at home go tonight?" And he said he just got this incredible sense of purity, that this man who had been part of the system, who had kind of rounded him up, put him in the field, treated him in such an undignified way, had a home where a Bible study had been held that night, and he was really quite curious to know how that Bible study had gone. And you asked yourself the question, so, you know, which is it? What does Christian faith actually mean? Is it this wonderfully life-serving force in the world? or is it sometimes something that can prove toxic? And what makes the difference? And I guess I'm wanting to suggest today that we can sometimes forget about some of the really big parts of our story. And if we forget some of the big parts of our story, we can land up with a toxic story, a story that's not life-serving at all. And so today, if we have had the time, and feel free to interrupt if you want at any point, if we had the time, I'd like to just quickly touch down on four little portraits from the Bible, which I think are portraits which should always guide us and help us if we are to make sure that we are people who in fact bring a message of genuine hope and life to the world. And the first, then, is the Genesis chapter 12, 1-3 portrait. It's about Abraham's call. And I think it's one that we need to go back to just over and over again. It was read out to us, but let me just read these verses again just quickly for us. The Lord had said to Abraham, which is always interesting, so Abraham in his obedience to God is actually putting something that happened in the past tense. We sometimes imagine that God spoke to Abraham and within 3 minutes he was off on his journey. That wasn't how it worked at all. He pondered, he thought, he wondered if he was going to obey what God called him to do. The Lord had said to Abraham, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And those are the words to remember, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. I guess the great tragedy of the Jewish nation is that they viewed their calling as privilege. They viewed it as status. They viewed it as something to be extraordinarily proud of. God had chosen them. God had chosen Abraham. For all the people who'd been living, could have chosen Abraham. He goes to Abraham and says, Abraham, I'm calling you. You go to this land, and I'm going to show you. I'm going to make you a great people. And it was just a trap that was so easy to fall into, that in such a short period of time, Abraham started to do that in terms of, I'm this incredibly privileged person. I'm better than everyone else because God chose me, and he, after all, didn't choose you. And so election, this wonderful doctrine which is taught in the Bible, that God chooses us. Some